Sup, freaks, it's your boy Marty here to introduce this rip of Rabbit Hole Recap. Another great rip. You guys are going to love it. It was brought to you by our good friends down the hall, Unchained. ETFs are now in the world. A lot of people are like, oh, I got to put it in my retirement account. You don't have to do that. If you want to get Bitcoin exposure in your retirement account, if you have an IRA and you want to get Bitcoin in that IRA, hit up the team at Unchained and transition your IRA into Bitcoin with Unchained's IRA product. They make it very easy. Instead of buying shares in an ETF, you can buy actual Bitcoin and hold the own keys within an IRA structure. Unchained makes it very easy. Go to unchained.com/consultation. Set up a call with their team to get hooked up. They make it very easy. You can set up a vault and transition it within a week. Get direct Bitcoin exposure. And then on top of that, maybe you don't want to hold it in an IRA. You just want to hold Bitcoin directly. Unchained has their vault product, a 2 or 3 multi-sig. Set up a collaborative custody setup where you hold 2 keys. Unchained holds 1. They have a trading desk where you can buy Bitcoin and send it straight to that cold storage multi-sig setup, that vault. They're doing things the right way. This is how you build banks without bankers, what Unchained is doing down the hall. So go to unchained.com/consultation. Hit them up to learn about their IRA product, their trading desk, their vault, anything that they're offering. This trip was also brought to you by our good friends at CoinKite. We have an announcement. CoinKite is hiring a web designer, a senior web designer. So if you're looking to get into the space, you're looking to work for one of the best companies in the space, CoinKite is certainly that. I have one of their products right behind me here, the Block Clock. I have a tap signer in my wallet. They are, again, a company building the infrastructure for banks without bankers. So go hit them up at coinkite.com/careers. Check out the description of that job description and apply there if you're a senior web designer. They need you. And then on top of that, if you're just looking for the best hardware in the space, CoinKite builds the best hardware. They have the Mark IV, which is a hardware wallet that allows you to create private public key pairs offline. You can add entropy to it via dice rolls. It's got 2 secure enclaves. It's NFC enabled. They're doing it the right way to create a private public key in the most secure way with entropy. Use the Mark IV. The cold card Q is coming out too, which is same guts as the Mark IV with more added features, a full keyboard, a QR scanner, a light, a battery pack. You'll be able to do all the same things, plus some more with that device. Pre-orders are available now. So go to coinkite.com. Check all this out. And again, if you're a web designer looking to get into the space and work for one of the best companies in the space, CoinKite is hiring. Go to coinkite.com/careers and enjoy this rip.
You've had a dynamic where money's become freer than free.
If you talk about a Fed just gone nuts, all the central banks going nuts.
So it's all acting like safe haven.
I believe that in a world where central bankers are tripping over themselves to devalue their currency, Bitcoin wins. In the world of fiat currencies, Bitcoin is the victor.
I mean, that's part of the bull case for Bitcoin.
If you're not paying attention, you probably should be.
Safe's definition, the miners are slaves that get paid very well. They just they're forced to listen to the network consensus. Matt, welcome Marty. To Nashville. It's been a great week.
Thanks
happy
for having
that you can
me.
Make it into town.
I promise there's a very good reason.
Are you in the doghouse? That's
my wife is an absolutely wonderful human being.
Yes. She is.
Huge.
She is.
Couldn't do without her.
No. Shout out to the Bitcoin wives.
Shout out to the Bitcoin wives. God bless the Bitcoin wives. They've been through a lot. Mine has, at least.
Mine too.
You missed a good day yesterday. It's been a great high signal event, building on last year. I said last year, this event, first event of the year, January, was my favorite event. I really like what you guys do here at the park with focused topics. You go deep over 2 days, and I think this year is a lovely extension of what you guys started last year with the Mining Summit.
Yeah, so I mean, we had Harry, who helped build the amazing juggernaut Bitcoin mining company that is Grid, help us as an advisor last year with the mining summit. And since then, he joined us as a partner. So, I mean, a huge shout out to Harry. He just fucking crushed it this week.
And I can't ask you, so I'll throw it to the panel. We're joined by Rob Hamilton, Shinobi, Luke. What do you guys think of the first couple days, day and a half? What's been the signal that you've picked up here?
Because I haven't been here, so you guys have to. You guys have to pick up.
You're first in line.
Well, I'm not a miner or in the mining infrastructure industry, but I always love coming to the park. The third spaces and the energy of getting, you know, 100, 200 people in the same space, excitedly talking about things that they're incredibly passionate about, and the breadth and depth across the industry of talking about developing, building applications, you know, all of the power. It's been incredible talking to all the people here that are just energy infrastructure. That's been a really interesting change compared to last year. The amount of people I've talked to who are like, oh, I just work on power grids. Like they're not mining directly. And I think that's a really interesting because it's the National Energy and Mining Summit.
It was almost like that was deliberate.
Yeah, no, I think that's incredible. I think I know. Shout out to whoever organized that.
Shout out us.
Shout out Harry.
Well, on that note, Matt, I think we're both going to lose our Zeta Hash bet. That was like a pretty insightful topic of discussion yesterday. Was like, what would it take to double network hash rate from here? And when you consider the amount of energy infrastructure that would take, it's pretty massive. We're probably not going to hit a Zeta Hash unless the 21s absolutely crush it and you can plug those in and they take us there. But
I mean, one of the coolest parts about the park is it's one of the few places in the world where you can have these hard-hitting, high-signal, off-the-record conversations. So what that means is, to those listening at home, this is going to be the taste of what happened here this week. You're not going to really know what the conversations were. And to me, someone who got here this morning, I have no idea what was discussed yesterday. But I think going forward, as Bitcoin slowly eats the world and becomes this global financial asset on the base of this global financial system, we need more and more, you know, collaboration that happens off the record, so people actually feel comfortable about talking about the hard topics, because we've seen, you know, like the mainstream influencers start to move in. I mean, Larry Fink is a Bitcoin influencer now. And as that happens publicly, what you start to get is you get a lot of groupthink. You get a lot of people not wanting to talk about the hard problems. So these type of events, these type of community spaces become more important.
Agreed. And Shinobi, I remember, I think I was on your show, or maybe we were doing Spaces a few years ago. But at that time, I was at Great American Mining. We were talking about hash rate, geographic distribution, and ownership. Has anything that you've seen over the last day and a half made you more confident that hash rate is sufficiently distributing?
No, but I'm a lot more confident that the people actually running these operations are taking these issues very seriously. And I've also had a lot of discussions with people who are kind of looking at alternative ways to deal with those types of systemic risks, like rather than kind of scatter to the winds, actually embed themselves deeply enough in the entire power production stack, the political stack, that it's not going to be like a trivial thing anymore to just go turn this off or you have to do this. Like, I actually embed themselves deeper in society to the point where they do have the ability to have a say or like come to a table rather than have an ultimatum issued to them. And that's actually like being here is great. Like I am an autist who has been obsessing about Bitcoin for a decade now, but I have been much more focused on the protocol side of things. Like I get mining, I get how it works. I get the ideas that people are playing with and experimenting with. But it's been really interesting to actually sit and talk with the actual miners, like what they're actually doing, what their mental models about going forward into the future are. And as much as I am still kind of worried about the risks, I can know for a fact now, after being here the last 2 days, like people know these risks and they're not just sitting idly on their hands going, I hope this works out. Like, they're trying to figure out the solutions and really deeply thinking about that.
speaking of somebody deeply thinking about that, Luke, founder of Ocean Pool, what's your take on the current state of the mining landscape, whether it be ownership of hash rate or distribution of pool control?
Yeah, obviously the situation around pools is much more centralized than the actual mining, the distribution of the miners and control of the miners. We've got 5 to 12 entities making all the block templates, and that's why they started Ocean, to kind of disrupt that, bring that back down to the miner, individual miner level, and have the miners actually making the blocks, which is what actually matters for mining decentralization in Bitcoin.
Yeah. Another like big topic that we talked about on my panel yesterday, it's actually really encouraging, in Chatham House rules, so I won't say the specific individuals, but it seems like the post-China ban migration to the United States has obviously led to a lot of hash rate here, but it seems like people in other parts of the world are beginning to spin up energy infrastructure and miners, particularly in Africa and the Middle East, which I'm very bullish on.
Is this the cycle where like the Saudi royal family isn't just a meme?
I think so.
Because it's been a meme for about a decade now.
You have to imagine, right? Like, they have to be looking at this like, all right, it's 15 years old. Maybe they look at it, there's an ETF. We have all this energy.
Maybe Larry called him up, right?
Yeah. Joe Biden just went to Putin a couple years ago. He's like, yeah, your treasuries are ours now. They have to be like, maybe that could happen to us if things get pretty hairy here.
Yeah, and the ETF and the financialization of Bitcoin, too, is like an interesting vehicle to talk about. You now have this straight energy arbitrage play where if you have the infrastructure and the equipment and you're able to mine, you're able to quickly get public market access liquidity to just trade your spread where you mine it, and you just directly like load it into the ETF. And I think just for anyone who is super skeptical about Bitcoin, they can just look at math and energy and be like, wait, so, you know, I can just do this work, get paid out. Obviously there's lots of steps in the middle, but at scale, you can get large returns on capital. And it's an interesting thing to understand that like there may be in conversations around here that there's people that are large miners that have no idea about any of the intricacies of Bitcoin. They're just doing an energy play. And I think that's an interesting part of the dynamics as Bitcoin continues to evolve, understanding each actor's own incentives and kind of alignment in the space.
Yeah. Plug a machine, spit out Bitcoin.
That was always one of the coolest parts about hanging out with miners more. And by the way, I just wanted to thank everyone for coming out. I mean, Nashville cannot handle snow. So the fact that we got 3 inches of snow and absolutely destroyed the airports, destroyed the roads, it really does mean a lot that you guys still made it out here. So once again, thank you for coming. One of the coolest parts with hanging out with miners is there's so many that their first introduction to Bitcoin was through the energy side, which is a completely different perspective than most of the Bitcoiners that I've become friends with throughout the years.
Yeah. I mean, that's falling down the energy rabbit hole in 2018 after joining Great American Mining was fascinating. And it does, I forget who I was talking about with Isaac Fithian from Cathedra next door. It is pretty insane. Number one, that with mining, we have the convergence of digital sound money and energy. And then number two, just the complete lack of understanding that your average human being has of both of these concepts and money and energy and how important they are to our everyday lives. And that's why I'm very happy that this event was very energy focused. I do think we're at a critical inflection point where people become completely detached from reality, the reality of how important energy is to everything we do in day-to-day life. And if we don't really push back against the insanity of this energy transition, things could get pretty hairy.
I mean, historically, Rabbit Hole Recap has been a week in review show. Done it for 5.5 years every week. Marty's had kids. I've gotten married. I've had a kid. Every week, no matter what, evacuated New York. And this week, you know, one of the big things on, at least on Marty's mind, has been Davos. I saw you posted screenshots.
I forgot. That seems like a week ago.
You posted
already
videos of all the clips that you thought were interesting at Davos. And that was a big theme, right? Was Bitcoin is bad because of energy usage. And the theme here is the exact opposite. It's like the counter signal of Davos.
Yes.
Let's fucking go. We can put that as the tagline.
Do you guys do this during Davos Bitcoin week potentially?
No, they actually conflicted with us. We announced it first.
No, I mean, it is pretty crazy when you juxtapose what's being said over there. I think John Kerry was there. Like, there's nothing any democratically elected president can do to stop this transition.
And then you have Jamie Dimon talking about Satoshi coming and deleting all the coins.
Wait, guys, I don't know why we're here. Blockchain's the innovation. JP Morgan's blockchain is going to tokenize it. We don't need Bitcoin.
It's important to realize that Jamie Dimon is a Bitcoin market maker now.
That's exactly what I was about to say, right? He's part of the ATF market making now for all these cash settled trades. So he's talking about Satoshi coming in and deleting all the coins and also just, you know, making his carry on the other side. With
at first, I thought that was an old clip because he also has a poorly aged clip from Davos last year.
Yeah.
And I thought the influencers just recirculated it, but...
I don't know if Parker...
It's amazingly a new version of the same thing you said last year.
No, it's funny. Parker sent out a tweet because he wrote an article after he did that last year. He's like, I don't even have to write another one. Here's what I wrote last year. He said the same thing. But no, like coming out of the clips, Ursula von der Leyen, the president of the EU, really pushing for censorship. Other people pushing for censorship here in the United States, particularly around the elections. It seems like the people at Davos want to put a lot of pressure on the social media companies to censor. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out this year. And again, the juxtaposition of what's going on here, what we're trying to build and push forth in the world is pretty stark.
Does that mean I'm going to get banned from Twitter again?
Probably.
Yeah, I mean, that just goes without saying. Like, the powers that be are scared by nothing more than the free flow of information. Like, since 2016, it has just derailed almost everything they've tried to do, every overarching plan to inch towards just like restricting rights or implementing any type of control system to their benefit. It's always just been the free flow of information that has derailed that or delayed that or staved off. This is probably, like, coming up to this election cycle, going to be the craziest shit we've ever seen as far as them pulling out all the guns to just stop that.
Yeah, I mean, the censorship's about to escalate. I mean, so Luke made a joke about getting banned from Twitter. He probably will get banned again. Shinobi mentions the trends in censorship. I'm curious, Shinobi, while we have you, I know you've not necessarily been a huge fan of Noster. Are you coming around to Noster? Are you starting to realize how important it is?
How's the scam going?
How's it a scam?
I mean, like, dude, I love Noster. I just don't see a viable path to its scaling as a social media replacement. Like, I think as like just the indexing problem. Like the way the inherent data structure and reference model works, it is a lot higher overhead. And it's just like, even without that,
I think
it is super expensive to run a massive like database like Twitter.
Yeah, but people will just figure it out.
Well, they won't. All of the attempts to monetize like social media Noster relays have floundered. And like, so 2 years just hold on, Matt. I see it working perfectly for small scale like communities. Like, if you want to have a bulletin board system or like a topical based system for like a specific subject, it works flawlessly for that. It will kill it as a communication medium for Bitcoin applications where different clients have to actually communicate with each other to negotiate things. But the only way I see it working as social media at the scale of something like Twitter, relays have to become amnesiac. They have to just go, everything that happened before 2 weeks ago, it's gone. If you didn't save a copy of that for yourself and host it on your own relay to keep it around, they just need to purge it and forget it. So that massive user bases on large public relays can actually be a economically like sustainable thing.
So the reason I said it's like the IQ meme is because like the beauty of Noster is that Fiat Jaff just like put something together that was incredibly simple. And if an engineer looks at it, it's easy to say, oh, it's not perfect. It does this thing wrong. It does that thing wrong. But it's just incredibly simple. It's easy to develop on. And there's not all these different, you know, attack surface areas that are hard to pay attention to. He didn't try and solve DIDs. It's just a simple pub key, private key pair. And he didn't try and make it decentralized. It's simply a bunch of centralized servers that don't even gossip between each other. But the reality is that the people have just been building this out, and the developer mindshare on top of it is absolutely insane. And we had a perfect example of you know, maybe a small scale version of the situation that people would expect, where Will of Damas, JB55, just woke up one morning and he just deleted the largest relay in Nostr. And not a single Nostr post was lost because there's a bunch of people that were just hoarding the information and keeping the information themselves. And I think, I mean, maybe I'm wrong and we'll see how it plays out. I'm not going to, you know, completely throw everything behind it like I do with Bitcoin. But I think there are, you know, maybe there are models there where people do have an incentive to at least store the important stuff. And the cool part is no one specifically decides what is the important stuff. So if you are a world leader, your Nostr post will probably live forever. And there's no engineering guarantees for that. But if you broadcast a cryptographically signed message, there are probably going to be multiple redundant copies of that forever. So I think it starts to work out, and in a lot of ways it comes down to, you know, if PayPal didn't censor people, if Swift didn't censor people, if the, you know, US fiat hegemony wasn't weaponized against nation states, like maybe Bitcoin wouldn't have as much success as it has been having. And the same thing goes with something like Twitter. Like if Twitter doesn't censor, if Elon becomes a god among men and actually believes in freedom of speech, like maybe Nostr doesn't become a thing. But if censorship starts to escalate, I mean, if I was a world leader, like I wouldn't want to rely on Twitter for public communications. Look what happened to Gary Gensler, right?
I mean, like I don't think it's going away. And I'm not saying that these are like impossible to solve problems, but it's going to take a lot of engineering work, a lot of structural changes for how users interact with things, how relays are managed. Like, you know, the basic design of the protocol is relays don't communicate to each other.
Yeah, there's no
like,
gossip between relays.
I forget the name of it, but there is like... a relay implementation that actually does do that. Like it actually, yeah.
And but like, a blaster just blasts to everybody. It's run by like, the muni wall, I guess.
Think the reverse of that. Yeah. A relay that grabs and indexes things.
Right.
Like if like we have like a massive Twitter scale relay that everybody's using to talk to, like millions and millions of users, you need to start deleting old posts. So when I want to go find your old post, how do I know where your relay is? Like we need to have.
Well, Bitcoin Park members have a Bitcoin Park relay they can count on.
Yeah, but that needs we'll never to be delete that their needs posts. To be indexable.
We subsidize and it with their membership fees
for all of those millions of users.
Right.
Like it's not just like the couple thousand people who know about the Bitcoin Park relay. That needs to be discoverable for everybody. And so, like I think like I see the potential there, and it's definitely a good thing to have around, but. In my interactions with like Nostr developers and people in that space, I think there is a severe underestimation of how challenging those problems are going to get as the scale of users continues to grow.
Deep into the Nostr weeds, but
it's enough about Nostr.
It's important.
It's important to bring it up while I had Shinobi up here.
Yeah. But while we're here, we're talking about mining. It's impression that we're here with all this weather. Particularly here in Tennessee and then also in Texas.
You have snow in Texas?
No snow, but it was like 10 degrees. The South is so soft when it comes to cold and snow. It's insane. We had 2-hour delays for 3 days.
It'll be good for the mosquitoes in the spring.
Yeah.
I didn't find out about the snow till the plane was landing. I feel rugged.
But
we literally got a text from Luke that was snow ? ?
But, I mean, it's prescient that's happening this week because the weather does affect the Bitcoin network in the sense that miners, particularly in Texas and ERCOT and here in Tennessee and the TVA, are engaged in demand response programs. And in Texas, 2 gigawatts of mining power came off the network for a considerable amount of time a few days ago. And I know here in Tennessee, many miners had to curtail as well, and the effect of that on the difficulty adjustment, I think we're going to hit that either later today or early tomorrow is a negative 4.5% difficulty adjustment.
Yeah, Ocean had just reached an exahash finally, and then all the curtailment hit it and it dropped to like 300 petahash.
It is. What do we think about this hash rate being affected by the weather?
Bearish on mempools clearing. The cold weather is an attack.
Thank you, Rob.
On the mempools.
And it's good because Rob lives in Nashville now, so the mempools will never clear again. Contingent here gets stronger every day.
It is like a weird.
I think you're looking at it wrong, though. Like the issue to me, the bigger concern is not the weather. I think as Bitcoin scales. You know, Bitcoin's going to be affected by all sorts of different macro and smaller micro kind of things. The bigger thing that people need to watch is demand response is not altruistic. Demand response revolves around a utility paying out the miners. So there's increased jurisdictional risk in those situations, right? I mean, some of these miners make more money from the utilities that are more or less intertwined with governments than they do actually mining Bitcoin. And so it does change the incentives a little bit. I think Bitcoin's robust enough to handle that, but it's something for people to keep in mind. Like that is the bigger connection than, whether it affects hash rate.
Well,
I think as long as the hash rate gets reasonably distributed around the planet, the whole planet's not going to curtail at once. It'll be one area and then another area.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and this week proves like I'm not going to say it's fully centralized, but like 2 gigawatts of a network that has 15 to 20 gigawatts in total. So it's like 10 to 15% coming off in one day in one spot. It's like, all right, maybe we should distribute that a little more.
Well, I mean, this just comes down to off-grid miners versus on-grid miners and the economics of profitability, like the options they have available for revenue and what is going to be more competitive at the end of the day, because there's no two ways around it. If you are on the grid, anything happens where the government decides somebody else needs this power more than you, it's getting turned off. Like whether you have actual like profitable curtailment arrangements or it's just like, hey, some crazy shit happened, off, we need this power for other stuff. Like that's just the reality of being on grid.
Gridders beware.
It'd also be good to point out that while some areas might need curtailment of the bigger miners, the home miners may actually mine more because it's cold. They need the heat. So it has a balancing effect in that regard too.
That's a very good point.
Is there any conversation around like the competitive energy consumption for things like AI data centers? Like I'm hearing a lot of conversations around just like data centers being a competitive resource against that, because the traditional narrative and just in Bitcoin always has been that this is use it or lose it electricity. And Bitcoin's perfect for that. Is there, like, what's the conversation around something that could compete against it, like a bunch of GPUs that could just start doing LLM stuff?
It's definitely coming. But I think the GPU space is like Bitcoin ASICs in 2014 right now. I think they're going to go through very similar cycles where you have like crazy run up in the price of GPUs.
You think they're taking like loan collateral as GPUs?
Yes, they are already. They're already making like collateralized GPU.
Well, it's wild that
credit instruments.
ETH went off proof of work where they were using all these GPUs, and then there was like a 2-year lull, and now all of a sudden all of those things are back.
Well, that's the worst part, because it like bailed out all the shitcoin miners. Single worst part of the whole thing.
No, but I think over time, like I think the GPU market will follow a similar trend to the ASIC market over the last 10 years, where you'll have like crazy efficiencies. People allocate capital terribly, and some will do it wisely over time. And
I'm going to have an AI ASIC. I'm going to be able to run my models really fast.
I don't know about that. I don't know how it works. I don't know if you're.
Well, I mean, like from my understanding, it's mostly the training process where you need like the intensive compute, and that can just be like stopped and started the same way that a Bitcoin mine can.
I don't think so, because you can't cache the data, from what I understand. So I actually think that's what I was going to get to.
So previously doing work in like data science, it depends on the structure and the kind of model you're training. If you're doing things over iterative epochs where I'm going to loop over something like 1,000 times, you could like benchmark it and pick it up later. But some neural network training, you can't stop halfway through because you're building out all of the interdependencies with the linear algebra. So, depending on how you're doing things, it depends.
But even then you can stop the processing, pause the processing and keep the memory powered.
Oh, kind of the equivalent of what you do with ASICs when you're powering them off is you keep the main like MCU online, but you turn off the hash boards.
Right.
Yeah. I think again, I'm not an expert on the training, like the necessary uptime. From what I understand from an economic perspective, these AI companies want to train these models as quickly as possible, so they want 100% uptime. I have an early view of, like, I think GPUs and ASICs, GPUs for AI and ASICs for Bitcoin mine, you're going to have somewhat of a symbiotic relationship where they could co-locate and miners can participate in demand response.
Well, I mean, I think this really plays in a lot to off-grid energy sources. Like, and this is something I've been assuming was coming for years. Like, you are disconnected from the grid, like a gas flare site, like geothermal or hydropower that's not connected. That's the exact same benefit that Bitcoin miners are looking for. It's dirt cheap. It's in the middle of nowhere if you are the type of cowboy who cares about being able to shoot the man in the face when he shows up. And it's, you don't have to concern yourself with curtailment agreements. Like, it's just not a factor. So, like, they're going to eventually, I think, go hunting around for those distributed, like, power sources,
but,
just like
but miners. Again, not an expert, but from what I do understand, like, the networking and the
scale.
Yeah, like,
doesn't it have a higher bandwidth requirement?
Yeah.
Starlink,
yeah.
Starlink isn't that great for bandwidth.
Amazon's building a competitor. Starlink is going to keep expanding that. And you better believe that Elon is going to start hunting around for more predictable, like high-scaled customers for that. Like, he's already looking at airline services, the deal he made with T-Mobile, JSX.
JSX already has Starlink.
Yeah. I think the point being, like, I think it's all well and good. There's definitely going to be competition for scarce energy resources. I just hope that the demand from ASICs and GPUs, like, gets people like, all right, we need to build a fuck ton more energy infrastructure, and that's the end result, which I think is overall good for humanity. Did you see the AI translation of Malay's speech, like, in his accent?
No.
It was really good. It worked really well. But that's super dangerous, too.
But it's awesome.
Because I just, like, blindly believed it. Did he say it?
I'm pretty sure it's an accurate translation.
What's the mantra of Bitcoin again? Something
don't
trust.
Just verify blindly. No, but they actually moved his mouth, and it was in the same voice as him instead of a translator.
That's scary.
I think it was Jason who posted it, who could go fuck himself, so I don't really trust the source. It was one of the all-in guys.
I listened to it in Spanish, and like from what
you translated it,
yeah, the loose, small amount of Spanish that I know, it sounded.
That's impressive translation parts. He spoke pretty fast.
Te hablas un poquito español.
Wait, Marty. I mean, you've been a big Malay. I'm not going to call you a fanboy. What?
No, I'm not. I've been very cautious on hopeful.
Your boy was
he's not my boy.
Got introduced by Klaus Schwab. Like, how do you feel about that?
You're rewriting the history of the show.
Why did they let him speak?
That's a very good question.
I can't rewrite anything. All the records are there.
Yeah. Go back and listen. I've been on the fence. Like, I don't know what to say about it.
I don't know. Is that stored on the blockchain? I think data is malleable when it's not on a blockchain.
I mean, the deep fake RHRs are coming.
Yes. Actually, I can't wait till we don't have to do it anymore. We can just, like, send the AI.
Just have to modify his Nostra post and make a new key and make it look like that was his key all along.
Well, I mean, that's one of the things people are sleeping on about Nostra is that every post is cryptographically signed by default.
Right, but how do you know the key is the right key?
Yeah,
I have gone through this with them for a long time, Luke. They don't want to.
I mean, American HODL had 12 Twitter accounts, and he never PGP verified anything. He just was like, "Hey, bitches, I'm here."
Maybe WorldCoin has it right. You need to verify in person. You need a BeatSpace verification.
Could you imagine American HODL like setting up a CLI for like a PGP key?
I tried to get him to do it for forever, and he was like, "Nah, it's unnecessary. Yeah. They know it's me."
I mean. Going back to the Malay speech, I was picking up what he's putting down.
But they literally had Klaus do the introduction.
Yeah, it was very weird. And like a lot of people are taking it as like a very big pivotal like inflection point, like people going to the Davos crowd and be like, no, this is all wrong. I mean, everything he said was correct to mine, like free, like the centralization and collectivism of the WEF and their
initiatives. It's a little bit weird that it was sanctioned, you know. That was allowed.
Well, I mean, he could have just like gave him some bullshit speech and then just walked up and gave that one instead.
Yeah, it was cool. It was cool to hear that. Who knows?
If you look at the view count on YouTube, it's like 400 views, like 400 views. And then at last I checked, it was over 65,000 views for his.
It was over 100,000.
So it's good publicity for Davos and Klaus.
Yeah.
This is the best viewership numbers I've ever gotten.
Do we have any topics we're going to cover before we open up to Q&A?
I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Opcat. I was told by somebody that was having a discussion with you last night. You've got some Opcat takes. I was talking about...
Well, I meowed first, Rob, so you have to start the framing first.
Rob did this a bit begrudgingly, so thank you, Rob.
Thank you. Well, you gave me notice this time because I've gotten tricked twice this week into jumping onto what Bitcoin did at mid conversation to talk about this. You at least gave me 10 minutes warning. So at a very high level, just to talk about like types of upgrades in Bitcoin, the most past two ones that we did were SegWit and Taproot, which were large changes, but they didn't introduce any new opcode. The most like opcodes we've added are check lock time verify and check sequence verify, which are how we do time locks in Bitcoin. Those were the upgrades we actually did before SegWit, right? For like functionality. Please jump in, Luke.
Taproot had some multi-sig add
type variants. Oh, opcheck sig add. Yeah, so Taproot added its own kind of design space with the op successes, right, to do other opcodes. But not to get too far in the weeds, you are right, though. When it comes to... So in the original client, Satoshi wrote Bitcoin script. It feels very funny explaining this with Luke here because he knows it way far better than I do. But basically, it's a way of how you can unlock and instruct Bitcoin to be
too,
used. Like, I know. I feel like I just got like put into like
a... Say something wrong, motherfucker. Say it.
So Bitcoin script, there's when Satoshi invented it, it had 256 different opcodes. In 2010... shortly before leaving the project, he deactivated a bunch of opcodes kind of like in a hidden commit, just like miscellaneous changes. And one of them was deactivating opcat. What is opcat? Cat stands for concatenate, which is just taking the top two elements on the stack and pushing them together. It's a very simple primitive. It's 9 to 11 lines of code. But Satoshi disabled it because originally at the time, it actually was a DOS vector because you could just... duplicate things over and concatenate, duplicate and concat, and you would actually crash the node. Since then, there's been a consensus change to make it only 512 bytes on a stack size limit, so that's no longer a concern. So opcat is a very simple tool that allows for very powerful programming primitives that you can get inefficiently but creatively in doing way more things than you would imagine combining two strings together could do. And that's kind of like the high-level context before I go any further. I'm not sure if there's anything to add.
I don't think there were a full 256 opcodes originally.
Okay. I thought it was just a 256 base two number. So, was there a different amount?
I mean, I've seen Lou's conversation around opcat on Twitter over the last few weeks. What do people, you know, I mean, you mentioned broadly you can do more things.
Like, why does it matter?
Yeah.
Well, it turns on drive chains. It turns on arbitrary covenant designs because you can emulate check sig from stack with it, which allows you to verify a signature against arbitrary data instead of just implicitly the transaction itself. And with those two things, you can pretty much create a signature against any arbitrary like commitment scheme or parts of a transaction. You can do all the covenants. Moonsettler has a concept to just do drive chains purely with opcat. Because of this, BitVM is made infinitely more efficient with this. So it sounds like a deceptively simple proposal, but it turns on all of the things at once without any conversation about second order effects, risks. Like, is this like the degree of complexity that we want to enable on the system and then have to deal with the consequences of it? And the entire meme campaign that they're engaging on is it's so simple. Oh, like all these developers who want to do all of these crazy things like it too. So what's the big deal about it? And it's just this massive push out of nowhere where they have riled up all of the JPEG morons and convinced them that this is a cool thing. We should do this. But the critical part here is a large amount of core developers have wanted this for a long time too. It's just they haven't pushed for it because of the conservatism in this space, the caution of the user base to step slowly, not just introduce a million new variables and changes that we can't really map out the consequences of. And they are building like this alignment between the developers, my precious, and all of the JPEG morons who will go, yeah, we're cool with this. Go ahead and do this. And they're just full steam forward, like campaigning for this at this point, but trying to go, oh, we're just starting a conversation.
Have we learned a lot about second order effects of these upgrades in the last year?
I think Ethereum showed us all of these lessons before they came to Bitcoin. So we've had the opportunity to learn these lessons twice.
I just want to point out that drive chains are already possible today. You just have a multi-sig where Ant Pool and Foundry sign.
Well, that's like a big question. Do we need to do all this creative sci-fi stuff? Like, why is money not a good enough use case?
Well, like I think that it is very important that we add new things to Bitcoin. Like we still have nowhere near the scalability we need for anything more than like 1% of 1% of the world population to actually sovereignly own their own Bitcoin and control how they interact with it like that. Like even in my opinion, especially after all the ordinals and inscription nonsense of the last year and the fee pressure this has demonstrated it can build, I don't even think currently the Uncle Jim model of just like the competent Bitcoiner being the little micro bank for everybody.
Don't shit on Uncle Jim. Scales.
Yeah, you just got like,
even that at this point in the reality of what's going on won't scale. Like we need to at least improve the scalability and cost effectiveness of how people interact with the blockchain another order of magnitude just so that Uncle Jim is a viable, like practical scaling solution. Wait,
can I just... I agree with you. Can I just shout out myself real quick? Uncle Jim was a term that I created drunk on RHR because I didn't want to dox my actual uncle's names. And now it's in like articles and stuff. It's just people are like, oh, Uncle Jim. Like, oh, yeah, of course. Like, that's the model. You know that model. It's fucking insane.
Uncle Jim, stacking sats. You got some bad.
No, but Uncle Jim specifically, like I sat there and I was like, I can't say one of my real uncle's names. And I just picked a random ass fucking name out of the hat. Yeah. And now it's the standard.
What's Uncle Jim twice?
Mean?
I know we tried to make like Auntie Jane and stuff, it never stuck. I just want to unpack. We usually don't unpack jokes, but I really liked Luke's joke for people specifically not in this room, but
it's a very good joke.
For people that are listening, we have a global audience of different technical levels of Rabbit Hole Recap. The main concern with drive chains is it effectively turns Bitcoin miners into custodians. And it adds a bunch of regulatory risk on top of those miners that are already facing regulatory pressure. And for that reason alone, it's not ideal. And so he also coupled that with mining centralization concerns and said you only need two pools to do it. Great joke. But, I enjoyed it.
But anyway, though, it's like I think like we need to add new functionality to Bitcoin for even that model to scale. But we need to be cautious and conservative. We need to really think through the second order effects as deeply as possible and go with the minimal, simplest change that gets us that scaling win without introducing a whole bunch of crazy shit that can happen. And they're pushing like way past that. Like, what's the big deal?
So like, I think...
Does that help in the regard of like pushing the, you know... You put what's the term? There's a term. You push the accepted narrative over
Overton window.
Overton window. You push the Overton window over, and then we get more. You know, a conservative but still substantive change. Is there something there?
Possibly. Yeah, I think if you're being honest, that definitely could be a perception or maybe a strategy.
I'm not saying that's their plan.
I mean like, yeah. So obviously, right. So now you go all the way to this other end and now things that people have been talking about for a while seem reasonable.
And all of a sudden people are like, oh, CTV, maybe we'll do CTV or something like that.
Yeah. So I guess I think to talk about something constructively, I mean, there's two branches here. I just want to say that since I messaged you about it and you said you're going to be in Nashville next week, we'll just talk about it live on AHR. So here we are. Brandon Black, Reardon Code, has issued a proposal for a new consensus change, which is called L-Enhance, like enhance, but just L-Enhance. And it is a combination of three additional opcodes. It is CTV, check template verify, which is a whole covenant conversation we'll just put aside for a second. Check sig from stack, which Shinobi briefly mentioned earlier. But check sig from stack is this operation where instead of just saying, hey, I own the private key to this public key, it's I have the private key to this public key and I'm going to sign this arbitrary message. So whenever you use like a Bitcoin wallet, you can like prove like, hey, I own the Bitcoin in this address. You can actually make that a consensus enforced thing. So it's not just I have the private key. It's I have a private key and I'm signing this specific message. And so it's those two opcodes plus op internal key, which is actually it's a Taproot opcode. And all it does is it takes your public, your internal key and puts it on the stack. It's op copy paste. And it makes something that's a 32-byte operation or 33, whatever, into a 1-byte operation. So it makes spending on the script path and Taproot more efficient. So I think what's interesting about this is CheckSig from Stack and CTV actually are able to do L2 emulation. Lightning symmetry is able to go through that whole having more efficient Lightning channels and having steadier, graceful transitions if your node's offline or you have old channel state being broadcasted. The alternative to that previously has been any prev out as an option for doing that. I think like these are things that were all coming out before all of the cat conversation started anyway. And I don't want to do a disservice to people who are working hard in good faith, trying to advance ways of making Bitcoin better without it getting lost in kind of like the rhetorical trolling conversation. Well,
how much of this rhetorical trolling on Twitter or wherever it's happening, like how much is that overblown? Like
a lot.
Yeah.
I mean,
how much influence does it actually have?
Well, if you think through, you have the degens getting to the point where they want this. And a lot of core developers have wanted this for the last decade. Like it literally is my precious. Well, think about how you get a change activated. Economic nodes. Now, if the degens can do 100 times more things that big exchanges can list and productize and monetize, what do you think their reaction is going to be to, oh, a way to make a crap ton more money? It's probably going to be okay.
But I mean, the argument is that they would lose their money if they are unconservative, if they're reckless.
In the long term,
right?
Like short term.
Like Bitcoin's the golden goose, right? Like even Jihan didn't have the balls to make a dramatic move during Bcash, right? He barely moved any hash rate over to Bcash because he was afraid he was going to kill his golden goose. His life was in Bitcoin.
All the biggest exchanges make a crap ton of money off of shitcoins.
But Larry Fink doesn't.
Well, he's like, dude, these ETFs are not just gobbling up.
Coinbase was on the side of bigger blocks last time around.
Yes, and they probably have a lot of grudges held about that. Plus an opportunity to make more money.
But the ETFs have a completely different incentive. Like the ETFs have a buy and hold Bitcoin, have it be as robust as possible long-term incentive.
Yeah, so that just it makes no difference to them if a bunch of shitcoin crap gets enabled that Coinbase can monetize.
But if it led to the deprecation of the network, the value.
Do you really think BlackRock gives a shit if Bitcoin gets heavily centralized, mining gets heavily centralized, but it still sustains itself as a finite supply? They don't give a shit. Like, that's fine. We still have our product to sell.
But if it gets heavily centralized, there's no reason to assume it would keep a finite supply.
Yeah. Well,
would keep its value.
Are we really sure that the hordes of people piling into an ETF or buying Bitcoin on Coinbase understand any of these things, like censorship resistant, the distributed network, and why that's valuable?
The ETFs are doing good education out there, you know?
Yeah, okay.
We're getting we're getting very in the weeds here. This is definitely a conversation for like a 3-hour Citadel Dispatch or TFTC that we could dive into. But before we go to questions, AJ Towns took to the dev mailing list and brought up like maybe we need to rethink the BIP process. Luke, what are your thoughts on that?
I think we just need more people involved in it. It's too much for just one or two volunteers at this point.
Rob, do you want to say something?
Well, I guess, yeah, I guess that was so like following this conversation and I'm just going to point to like the L-Enhance conversation. Reardon's first pull request into Bitcoin was this consensus change. Like, total, just like, never been here before. Like, here's a consensus change, right? And which is funny in its own right, just being able to do that. But the question then became, you know, well, you're suggesting a consensus change. This doesn't belong in Bitcoin Core. And there was this whole thing, Performance Art of BitLand, talking about how do you make an upgrade to Bitcoin. And part of it was a satirization of just like how there is no anything and the left hand doesn't talk to the right hand. And so Brandon was told that it didn't belong in the Bitcoin repo. He's suggesting a change. It doesn't belong here. It should go into Bitcoin Inquisition, which is a personally maintained repo. But then up till, you know, yesterday, if you had the practice that was had for Inquisition was you needed to have a BIP number, which seems reasonable, doesn't seem. But then Luke was not aware of the chain of events of that. You need to get a BIP number to get into Inquisition, and you need to get into Inquisition to make a consensus change to Core. And I don't think you intended to be any sort of intentional like gatekeeper in that process, right?
Well, you shouldn't need to get into Inquisition to be changed to Bitcoin. And while it might make sense to say maybe consensus changes shouldn't go through Core anymore, that shouldn't require Inquisition. It should just be another activation client like Taproot.
Interesting. Do you think that's a good, like, maybe standard of just consensus changes don't go through Core, and maybe they just exist elsewhere, and then Core follows after there's consensus shown outside of Core?
Yeah, I think that's probably the best approach to go for going forward.
And just one question. So this was the idea of BIP 3 in part talking about kind of updating the BIP process, because right now, just for some context, BIP 2, which you wrote, was about how to add new BIPs. And part of BIP 2, it says you need to go to the developer mailing list to suggest a new BIP. But the developer mailing list is on its way of being kind of like sunset. And I call this the equivalent of all of the developers lock their keys in the car and they're looking inside. Because now if you formally add a BIP, you need to use the dev mailing list. But the dev mailing list doesn't exist anymore. How do you actually add a new BIP?
Didn't Brian Bishop come out and say they were going to, the mailing list might be fine?
Oh, is it actually going to be fine now?
They found a new host or something?
Yeah. Is that true, Luke?
Because no one wants to host it either.
It seems like no matter what, the mailing list is going to survive in some form, from what I can tell.
Yeah, we're getting deep into the weeds here. If you're an energy person, it's like, I'm coming to this mining conference. This is like...
Well, also, I just want to remind everyone that GitHub is owned by Microsoft now as well.
Yeah.
Just might become relevant in the future.
Beware. With that, we're going to open up to questions.
And this is different than typical Bitcoin Park panels. The questions will be recorded and broadcast, so just keep that in mind and make sure Tom gives you a mic when you ask the question.
So going back to the mining talk, specifically about curtailment, like, are we not worried that if the energy companies have the ability to turn off miners in 2.5 seconds, that other people will get that ability, governments or adversarial actors? Because like you said, you're not going to curtail all across the world at once, but if the button exists.
For the big miners, I think they've always had that ability. They can, you know, flip the master, the mains switch, and just shut the facility down if they want to.
Yeah, I guess the question would be like, I think in the scenario that you're laying out, like, can the governments get access to each individual mining operation and do it at the same time? I don't think they'd be able to do that in any reasonable way.
Well, I mean, this is kind of what I was saying when it comes down to like off-grid versus on-grid miners and like who winds up actually finding the most revenue streams, like becomes the most profitable, has the most capital to continue expanding. And that's just a fundamental issue that comes down to who wins the competition.
I mean, to that point, to this question as well, I mean, historically in Bitcoin, we haven't had to worry about the governments, but Bitmain with AmpLead. I mean, technically, at one point, Bitmain could have done this remotely via the AmpLead.
No reason to think that's gone away.
Yeah.
I think the concern is less, you know, turning off the miners than slow co-option, frog boiling kind of stuff, right? Because if you turn off the miners, even if it's a decent amount of hash, like, we'll get through it. It'll be a long difficulty adjustment. Fees will go fucking crazy. I'll be all caps about fees. But we'll get through it. Difficulty will readjust, and Bitcoin should be fine in that situation.
Well, even then, it wouldn't be much different from just producing the block size, which
you love.
Rather than increasing the fees, it would just
people would just not make transactions they don't need to for right. a while.
Yeah, only needed transactions. You take a break.
Yeah.
And I know touch we're grass I know or
we're,
snow.
I know we're supposed to think adversarially, but again, this summit's made me very bullish on the people involved on the energy side and the mining side. And I do think, I said this on What Bitcoin Did, because we had to do a live What Bitcoin Did because Matt wasn't here. It was a great episode.
I've heard that's not getting broadcast, though, and this is getting broadcast.
It's not? But good.
A bigger issue is if like the government pay miners to start shoving blocks full of spam.
Yeah. Are they doing that right now, Luke?
Hard to prove, but maybe.
But the point being, like, I do think the energy situation in the world, the energy infrastructure has gotten to such a point where it's become blatantly obvious that the governments have really fumbled the ball globally. And I think the energy companies recognize that, and they recognize Bitcoin as this mechanism to make it extremely robust. And again, going back to killing the golden goose, whether it's Coinbase doing these upgrades that they want to do begrudgingly, or an energy company listening to the government, I think there is a political pushback and will there to some extent.
By the way, I asked for a TLDR of the live What Bitcoin Did, and all I heard was, did you call them gay pegs?
Gay pegs. I thought it was funny.
It's important. The people need to hear it. Do we have a next question?
I know this is a mining crowd or energy crowd, but this is like easily the most fascinating conversation for me. I really appreciate the discussion. I also appreciate your comment, Luke, that it is a big job to maintain. It's just a big job for one person to do all this work. It's very recent, only in the past 24 hours or so, but AJ Towns proposed and threw out the BINANA. Do we call it banana? Do you guys have any comments or thoughts on this, or have we even had a chance to like think through this alternative Bitcoin development idea?
I believe he just proposed it as a way of assigning numbers for proposals and inquisition, which I suppose makes sense. I don't know that it really addresses the issue of not having enough time for maintaining the BIPs repository.
Is banana an acronym?
Yeah. It's a Bitcoin Inquisition number and something. It's an acronym.
Oh, it's Binana.
Binana.
Got it.
Yeah, so I think, to your point, like, it's not a consensus process. So I think it's a reasonable way to, for the sake of Inquisition, to have, and just to explain, Inquisition just has all these random things turned on to let people test things and show, like, functionality and cross-compatibility and how they all synergize with each other. But again, it's a test network. It has nothing to do with the Bitcoin consensus process formally.
I don't get what the point is of it. And I really see nothing coming out of this except just pointless, like, silly confusion over what something's number is. Like, is it going to be the same for a banana number and like an actual BIP number? Like, why?
Yeah, I'm not sure what the purpose is for it, but if they need a number, then
I haven't read the newsletter or the mailing list yet, so I have no comment here.
Yeah, no idea this happened. Next question. No more questions. We have a question. Speak now or forever hold your peace.
You'd kind of gone into different potential activation paths. It seems like this has been a point of contention for many years, and we don't have a good idea how to do it. I just wondered if you could go into a little bit more detail on maybe what you think would be an ideal or an optimal path to activating a core consensus change.
The first step is to get apparent consensus from the community, and then we've got BIP APE for the technical side of it. I don't see a reason to deviate from that.
That's just version bit signaling?
Right.
How would you judge that rough consensus? I mean, I know it's a tough question. Like, is there any guardrails that you view? Are there things that you look at to judge this rough consensus? We've thrown out Twitter, we've thrown out Bitcoin Park. We've thrown out basically everybody. So how can we say Bitcoin Park doesn't represent Bitcoin? Bitcoin Twitter doesn't represent Bitcoin. Reddit doesn't represent Bitcoin. But we still need to find fucking tests at some point.
You got to look at all the venues, talk to people all over the world.
I mean, it's messy. I'd like, and this is probably, like, in my opinion, one of the like biggest existential problems developers face is like, who do you gauge consensus of? Like the active subset of people on Twitter or communities like this? Like, what about Coinbase users who don't pay attention to any of this? Or like a small like town like El Zante down in El Salvador? Like who is the user when you discuss like gauging consensus? Like my personal opinion is there's nothing to do but do your best. And if there is no glaringly obvious majority of what you're sampling against something or no very solid argument for why this change will have negative consequences, whether you opt into using it or not, you just need to do your best and try. And like personally, I think that we need to stop being scared about the potential of chain splits. If there is a overwhelming majority in support of something, there will be no chain split. There will be a tiny group of people who have no economic weight or relevance that fork off and probably just come right back and go, well, hell, everybody else wanted to do this.
Well, chain split isn't necessarily the worst case scenario. Worse than chain split would be that the miners are all enforcing this, but the full nodes are not, the community is not. And then we essentially have the miners performing a 51% attack simply by accident.
Well, that's just that's kind of why we have them coordinate and like signal for the activation optimistically, if it doesn't fall back to like lot true, is to give people that time to safely upgrade and transition to fully validating again. But like if a tiny group of people go and they take their $500 and go off in the corner on their own chain, it doesn't matter. And like the worst case, in my opinion, if we do have an actual substantial, sustainable split down the middle where both move forward with economic weight and there isn't just a clear loser that fades off into irrelevance, then honestly, that divergence probably needed to happen because there is some irreconcilable difference about what those two groups want out of Bitcoin.
Right, but I'm saying the scenario could be worse than chain split. There could be no split and have majority of the network not actually running a full node anymore because they're not enforcing the new rules.
Well, then we have to pester people to keep up with updating.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about this on the show a lot. I mean, particularly after Taproot activation, I know me personally, I'll just speak for myself. It was like, I don't feel comfortable personally. I'll just speak from my own experience, like championing this stuff.
Taproot caught me off guard. I had to donate 1 million sats to HRF because it got activated way quicker than I expected.
Yeah.
So I would caution, and I think Shinobi's kind of been championing this in the middle of our row here. I would caution against the idea that you can just sit there and expect that controversial changes won't happen and that it's too difficult to change. I mean, one of the key fundamental, like foundational properties of Bitcoin is that it's incredibly hard to change by default. It's one of the things that gives it its value, because if you can change something, then you can change it for the worse. But I know with Taproot specifically, I mean, I didn't specifically think it was a malicious change. I'm still glad we did Taproot, but I was really surprised at how quick it passed through, to the point where I lost, you know, generational wealth and had to donate it to devs.
Yeah. No, it's weird doing this. And that's the other thing you have to factor in too, is there are these waves of adoptions that may or may not be coming. And if they do come, then you have considerably more people that are, you have to get a consensus. You don't have to, but you have to get that rough consensus of the new users.
Yeah, and rough consensus is like a huge understatement. Like the rough is like all caps.
Yeah.
It's quite rough.
Yeah.
And there's no way to objectively calculate it ahead of time.
No.
That's why I think, you know, when Shinobi says, like, you know, maybe a chain split isn't the worst thing in the world. I think a lot of people did and I've been very consistent with this, but I think a lot of people took the wrong thing from Bitcoin Cash, which is that, you know, Bitcoin Cash was never really a threat. And it handled itself. Like, the market realities handled itself, and anyone who bet on that horse lost a substantial amount of money and credibility and, you know, future reputation in the process.
Actually, on the additional, on top of that, as Mr. Hoddle says, I just want an airdrop. So like whatever gets an airdrop and gets me, you know, free risk-free yield on my Bitcoin. So you just dump the fork. That's the other side of it too. It's not just one side becomes irrelevant. The other side that ends up winning the consensus change in some way economically advantages themselves as well.
The first person who makes a clip of him saying that specific sentence that I'm not going to repeat will get 100,000 sats.
Fuck your mother if you don't want fuck.
I know exactly.
Any more questions? Bueller.
I mean, I think we should wrap. We have
I think you got a
straight fire panel in 12 minutes that I'm not going to say who is joining us for that until we stop recording. But everyone should be in here. It's going to be.
I'm happy you disclaimed awesome. That because I was just about to YOLO into his coming. Yeah. Up, so.
Well, let's just say bye to the freaks. I want to thank Rob, Shinobi, Luke for joining us, and Marty for joining me every week, putting up with my shit. Especially Postburger. Well, thank you guys.
Thank
you. Thanks to all of you for joining us.
Thank you all. Peace and love.